The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I am your employee, and as such, I expect to be treated equally with a little dignity and a little respect.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show with me, your guest host, Kevin Turley, coming to you live from London. And that's London, England, not London, Ontario. It's a total joy to be with you this evening. Wasn't Jennifer amazing? Such an inspiration, that woman. Now, something which isn't inspiring me is the latest edicts or exhortations emanating from corporate human resources departments. Do you know what the latest catchphrase is? Bring your whole self to work. It's the latest faddish attempt to lure workers back to the office and away from the comforts of home working. You know the sort of corporate HR memo involved in this. It urges you to return to where you know you truly belong, back to what you know you have been missing all these past months. Not those open plan offices where no one can agree the temperature in the much vaunted open plan, the environment where often long-standing feuds are waged between colleagues, all watched over by supervisors with their endless speech making on teamwork and leadership, to say nothing of the plain old annoying habits of one's fellow workers. Yes, come to think of it, I'm sure you can't wait to get back to the office. Okay, I exaggerate a little bit, but seriously, and more worryingly for committed Catholics, there is often a challenge in work environments that no modern human resources department wishes even to acknowledge, let alone address, because it is one that tells you openly or more subtly by word or gesture that you need to keep your religion to yourself. If you work here, the unwritten office etiquette is that you need to adhere to what we believe on ABC, fill in the blanks. Long, long ago, in the last century as it happens, in a distant time before the advent of the present arguments about so-called woke issues, I was sitting in a corporate management meeting in London, and one manager was making a speech, and it had a clear message. It was summed up in that manager's last flurry of words. She said, "You can be any religion you want, but you keep it out of the office." And at those words, she looked straight at me. I had been rumbled. Needless to say, I didn't last long in that environment. Today's workplace appears to have gotten a whole lot worse. Now, to help me navigate this, I am joined by a good friend of mine, Dr. Amal Marogi, who is a life coach coming to us live from Brussels in Belgium. Dr. Amal, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Now, I don't know if you heard that little preamble, Amal, but do you think I'm being too pessimistic about the Christian in the workplace?
I don't think that is pessimistic. I think it's quite accurate, in fact, what you are saying, and it's a challenge, but I don't think that's a challenge that it is new. It has always been a challenge for Christians to be in the workplace or even in the world. You know, it is, we are, it seems that people are asking us, or we have been asked, to keep our faith for ourselves and not to, you know, to influence other people, but I wish that they knew that it would be better for Christians to be Christians in the workplace and everywhere where they are, because it's in their own interest. Not only that, as a Christian, okay, you have to prove that you are Christian, but I think that is in the interest of the world and the employees and the employers and the colleagues to have us, you know, just being Christians and Catholics.
So there's a desire amongst Catholics, obviously, to spread our faith, to welcome people to the truth that we have. And one of the great places that you can do that is in the workplace, through colleagues, through just the to-ing and fro-ing of everyday life in an office or in a factory or wherever you happen to be working. But we seem to have got to a stage where Catholics in particular have to be almost kind of subversive in how they do that. You know, it's almost like you've got to be Catholic and Christian, a great colleague and a great friend, but you must never announce, you must never blow your cover in a sense and announce that you're Catholic. And it seems to be a very difficult tightrope for a lot of people to walk. In your professional work as a life coach with people working in various settings, would you say that this is something that is coming up in your professional life?
Yes, I think more and more because people are being pushed to hide who they are, in fact. And people are not interested. I think that it's also, you know, like people have to, we have to understand where they are coming from. The problem is that now being a Christian means being anti-abortion, anti-this, anti-that. And they forget that a Christian is not a set of morals, you know, we are not an anti-people. We are people of life. We, you know, like, I mean, they forget that Christianity is about Jesus. That's why it's called Christianity. It's about Christ. It's not like any other religion, you know, like other religions have founders, but Christianity doesn't have a founder. Christianity is about Christ. And and that's what we have to explain to people when they feel that we threaten them in a way. It is just because they are afraid and they have reduced Christianity to a set of moral obligations or prohibitions. And that's why they ask us, you know, to just to keep our faith to ourselves. And I think that if you explain where you are coming from, and then expose really the hidden, you know, I won't say that hidden agenda, but that hidden prejudice that they have against Christians, I think that they will be able to understand, or at least, you know, they've heard where you are coming from.
What do you make of this latest, you know, bring your whole self to work business? What do you make of that?
I've read that article and I had a mixed feeling about it. You know, like I think that there are these slogans and words and labels that they are, you know, like people words even like impact and bring yourself to the work, be authentic, be this, be that. We have to be very accurate about it because it is like, yes, you have to be authentic, you have to be yourself. We don't like to have people that we don't know if they are the, you know, if they are who they are or if not, you know. But at the same time, what does that mean being authentic or bring yourself to your work? I think there is a tendency nowadays just to be very vague about words and concepts. And we have to understand what they mean by bring yourself or be authentic, bring yourself to your work. For me, probably it would mean completely something different to someone else. And that's why, you know, like what I've missed in that article, for example, is or when people say bring yourself to your work, I will ask them first, what do you mean by bring yourself to your work?
Well, you know what I thought, Amal? I thought that bring your whole self to work, I thought they'd spelt it wrong. It should be bring your holy self to work. But anyway, that's if you want to speak to Amal, she's a life coach, any life advice, but specifically about the workplace and survival as a Christian in the workplace and perhaps a hostile workplace, then do call us on 888-914-9149. But in all seriousness, Amal, there is something holy about work. This is one of the great discoveries, certainly with people like St. Jose Maria Escriva and so on, that work can be sanctified and can also sanctify us. And there's something about this whole self to work business that kind of gets it, but like a lot of things in the secular world, it misses then. You know, it kind of is aiming at the right thing, but it misses. Would you agree?
Yes, I do. I think that, as I said, you know, like we have to understand what people mean by bring the whole self to your work. If it is, you know, all your personal problems and just to, you know, just to go, you know, like you blur that important division between the personal and the professional. In that case, I would say, no, please keep yourself to yourself, you know, and work is work. But if we mean to be that, you know, who you are, what your values are and how your values reflect in the way that you are doing your work, then I would say, by all means, that's what we are supposed to do. And that's when work becomes an occasion for us to sanctify ourselves and to sanctify other people. So it is, you know, there is no part-time Christian. You're either Christian or you aren't. You know, like it's either switched on or off. You know, like you cannot just leave it somewhere in between. And when, as I said, you know, like, it is better, really, you know, like if I was an employee, an employer, and I weren't a Christian, I would have loved for Christians to work for me, because I know that, you know, if they have to follow their, you know, the precepts of their faith, if they have to follow their conscience, then I'll have the most amazing people working for me. So
that's absolutely right. I mean, it's a fallacy that somehow being religious makes you less of a good employee. I mean, in my experience, the most religious people I've ever worked with are often the people the most honest, the most straightforward, and they really want to do a good job. And it was always the people who didn't have religion that had problems with one sort or another. But I've got a question here for you that's been sent privately, Amal. Do you find it difficult to evangelize at the workplace? I guess that's a direct question for you. In your work, you work with people of faith and no faith. Mm-hmm. How do you go about evangelizing in your work setting?
I really don't go about evangelizing in my work setting. It's just I try to live my Christian faith as I've learned it from my mother and grandmother and my parents. So it is just to be really me and bring that light of Christ to people around me, just by doing what I'm expected to do as a Christian. I think that people know and they can see how you are working, how you are treating other people, and then they start asking questions. And I don't shy of saying who I am, what I believe, but I have a lot of respect. I ask a lot of questions, and I love asking people questions and debating in the good sense. You know, it's not just proving who is right here, but they know that they can ask me. They know that we can have, you know, like a conversation that is open and respectful, but also very sincere and very truthful. So I don't try to hide anything. I try to explain. I mean, like as St. Peter said, you know, like you have to be ready to give account of the hope that is in you. So that's for me what I try to do. You know, like I try to give an account of the hope that is in me. And I hope that in my work that I reflect that hope and that joy and that respect for other people. And I think that's how I evangelize.
Absolutely. You remind me of those words of St. Francis when he sent his first followers out, and he said, preach the gospel, use words if you have to. Now, that's not an excuse to say nothing, but it is often our quiet witness and a quiet example in the workplace that makes others curious about us. Do you think, you know, that they think, well, what makes you tick? How come you're not depressed? How come you're not, you know, whatever? Do you think it's that sort of quiet witness? You know, this idea that Christianity is caught, not taught, a lot of the time?
Yes, I think that's what many people need to see now. You know, like, and we have this crazy idea now that has reduced Christianity to, you know, to a free, you know, like a limited rules, moral rules, and they can't see the bigger picture. So this is the whole problem with Christianity. And when you come with that fresh way of living Christianity, and just to show them that, you know, you are not someone who is bigoted, who is restricted by all these moral laws, that you are not allowed to do so many things, that you are, you know, but you are someone who is enjoying life, and they know how to enjoy life, and it is thanks to your faith that you can enjoy life to the full. I think that if they don't, you know, I mean, in most cases, people are very interested and they start asking me further questions, you know, like, and that's how most of the friends that I know. But if they are not open and they have their prejudice, and I know that people have, you know, their issues, so it's fine. But at least they are intrigued, and at least they cannot say that Christianity is what they have in their mind. You know, so that if they don't immediately have the faith or change their mind, at least they know, I give them the sort of, you know, this is what Christianity is really about.
You're listening to Dr. Amal Marughi live from Brussels in Belgium. It's very late. She sat up very late for this. And you can call in and speak to her, a life coach, a real live life coach. 888-914-9149. Just widening it out a little bit, Dr. Amal, do you deal with a lot of people who are stuck in a rut? They're in a job that they really don't get anything from, and they want to do something else, but they don't quite know how to get there.
Yes, I have many of these people, you know, like, and I see them, unfortunately, sometimes around me, you know, like, and they don't even know that they are stuck. They are just very unhappy. I think that the first thing for a situation like that is that if people are not aware that they are in that situation and why they are unhappy, at least try to open a way for them to see it or even to consider it. I'm always happy when people start talking about it, because I know at least that that's the beginning. It has to, you know, the initiative has to come from them and not from someone else. And once they have, you know, like, I use that also with my students a lot. And I used to say, look, if you are drowning, just ask for help, because once you've drowned, I can't do anything. I'll just, you know, like, pull you out of the water and, you know, bury you and be sad for you. But I think that once you find yourself stuck, the most important thing is just to really try and see where you can find help. If there's a way that you can get out of that situation that you are finding yourself stuck in. And don't wait too long, because once you've waited too long, it's very, you know, I think that it will be more difficult for you, at least. I've been coaching some people like that. And unfortunately, like, they have reached such a, you know, a level that there is no way back. And sometimes they just have to quit, for example.
Yes.
And
yes.
And I think that is really, that's where, you know, our work is very important for us, but we cannot be enslaved by our work.
No.
If there is a mission, you know, like, if I'm doing my work, I have a mission as well. My mission is not only just evangelizing, there is the common good. I want to do something good for other people. And when I'm doing something good for others, you know, like, I'm doing that, you know, like, something good to myself as well. So if you are not being helped, if you are not improving in your work as a person, so you have to improve, you have to grow as a person.
Yes.
So then that's where I'm going to say, I will challenge you just to stop and think and really ask yourself if this is the right moment for you to go and ask for help if you don't have help handy.
It took me a long time to realize it, Dr. Amal, but you know, the whole idea of vocation is linked to God's will for each of us. Mm-hmm. And our professional calling is a vocational calling for all of us, whether it's Jennifer Fulweiler, who's just been on the show talking about becoming a comedian, you know, and that's a very much a vocational calling, or your calling as a life coach. And what I find is that a lot of people who are depressed at work or unhappy at work, they've never discovered this secret that work, that there is a work that is our vocation. Mm. Would you agree that there's something that we're called to do, which, if it's God's will, is going to make us really, really happy?
Yes. Yes. I think that we have to realize that wherever we are, whatever our situation is, we are there for a reason. And if, you know, like, your work is not just by chance, it's not because you have studied something specific and that is, you know, the way is, if you're an engineer, you are just going to work where engineers do their work. And if you're a teacher, you go to school. It's just why you have been a teacher in the first place. And why have you chosen for engineering, for example? And I think it's that sense of mission. You know, you have chosen what you have chosen for a reason. And if you are in a particular place, even if you are very unhappy and if you are stuck, there must be a reason why you are there. And for me, it's always, yeah, I ask myself, why am I here? What is the reason that I'm here? Am I supposed to stay here for longer or not? And for me as a Christian, for me, it's always the question that I ask myself. Am I giving glory to God by doing what I'm doing at this moment? Is this my mission? Is this how I can serve the common good and others?
Is that why you do what you do?
Yeah. Yeah, that has always been the reason why that I've been doing what I've been doing so far.
Tell me a, without obviously revealing identities, tell me a real success story that you know where somebody went from a job they hated and an unhappy situation at work to something where they felt completely fulfilled.
Now I can't think on the top of my head. Like I think that what I know is really, like when you have some people, there are. I think that what we have to make a distinction between a difficult situation at work where you can go and talk to your boss, and then the situation gets better. So I've seen that. So I always ask my coaches to see the difference between is the situation at work something that they can remedy, is that they can improve or not. But for me, like the way that I worked with these people, where I could see the difference really, and I could see like amazing results, where it went from nearly failure to being someone who started loving what they are doing, is to work with the person self, not with the work. Because if we are happy or unhappy, the work is something external. We do what, like this is, we allow the work to influence us as much as we want. So if we are not strong ourselves, it's very difficult to, to face the difficulties that we are facing at work. And also we bring ourselves and our problems to work as well.
That's
And
right.
that's why when I work with people, like I don't focus on the work situation, because there are some things that you can change. There are some things that you cannot change. You cannot change the character of your boss or of your colleague. What you can change is your attitude towards your boss and your colleague.
Yes,
And
absolutely.
once you once and that's what which will give you the strength to decide, can I continue here, yes or no? And for me, it is just when the person feels that they are ready to take that decision and say, you know what, I don't think that I can't see, a way of staying here any longer, so I'm ready now to move on. That's for me, like a success story, because, I try to, to work with the person and what not with the external situation. I can't influence your work. I can't influence your decision to stay or not to
That's right.
stay. But what I can do is, as a coach, and this is what you are supposed to do as a coach, not to take the decision for your coachee, but to give them the tools to make them strong enough and hopefully wise enough to be able to see for themselves if they want to
Absolutely.
continue or not.
Very, very wise words, Dr. Mal. I think I should sign up for a course straight away, actually.
Thank you.
How can people find out more about you and your work?
I'm working now on a website, so I have a website called Eli Schlama. It's a little bit difficult, so it is Eli Schlama. So it is an Aramaic word, which means, like my God is peace. And so there is a website that they can find me. And I'm working on another website called Coaching for Hope that will be only for coaching. But if anyone wants to get in touch, please do feel free to get in touch. And you can email me on info at Eli Schlama, so Eli Schlama, that is ELISHLAMA.com. So again,
Thank you.
info at elishlama.com.
Dr. Mal, it's such a pleasure speaking to you, and thank you so much for staying up so late tonight.
Pleasure.
Thank you. When we come back, we're going to be discussing books. It's getting dark. Yeah, I suppose you've noticed winter's coming, a time to reignite our love of literature. And I've got two literary ladies coming up straight after this break. Stay tuned.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Paperback Writer.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show, coming to you live from London with me, your guest host, Kevin Turley. It's such a joy to be with you this evening. And it's such a joy to remind you that November is coming down the track, and during November we celebrate the lives of our friends and family who have passed, and we pray for their entry into the Kingdom of Heaven. And you can join the Relevant Radio family in prayer from November 2nd through to November 10th as we offer a novena for these holy souls. You can submit up to 20 names of your departed loved ones at relevantradio.com/souls from now to November 10th. When you submit the names of the souls to be prayed for, You'll also receive reflections from Father Rocky each day of the novena to help you enter more deeply into prayer. Add the names of your loved ones at relevantradio.com/souls and join us as we pray for them during Holy Mass, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and the Family Rosary across America, all live and exclusive here on the Relevant Radio station. Now, what else is coming down the track is winter. It's drawing near with every day. And for many of us, that means dark evenings spent in front of a welcome fire. And what better company to have on such a night than a good book? Now, I don't know about you, but I lost my appetite, my former appetite for literature, somewhere around the lockdowns and the pandemics. I think it's got something to do with that. And I'm trying to rediscover my great love for literature. So I thought, who better to ask than two friends of mine who are also the best read women I know. Michelle McAloon is the host of the literary podcast Crossword, and Fiorella De Maria is the Ignatius Press author of Too Many Books to Mention. Michelle, Fiorella, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Hello.
Mr. Turley, hello.
I should say that Michelle is a real trooper because she's coming to us from Germany, and I think it's about 4 o'clock in the morning there, Michelle. Is that right?
Well, it's late. It's London right now, so we're both a little punchy.
It's late.
That's right.
It's late. And Fiorella, you're coming to us from the southeast of England. Now, listen. We haven't got much time, and I've got a lot of questions. And also, if anybody out there wants to join in this fun, it's 888-914-9149. And it's this. I want recommendations. I want you to excite my mind once more to get me into books. So let's begin. I want two fiction recommendations. Books you've read recently, fiction. Two. Let's start with you, Michelle.
I can't believe you're asking this. The Father Gabriel Mystery Series, right?
Oh, thank you.
Of course.
I better tell our listener that the Father Gabriel Mystery Series is written by the other person on the call, Fiorella. But you've got to pick individual books, Michelle. You can't give me series because look, I'm struggling here. I need a book. I need two books, two fiction books.
Okay, I've got two from Chrism Press, a great, great Catholic press that is up, new, and coming. And we need to just watch this because they're going to win a prize for literature. And the first book is The City Mother by Maya Sinha, a first-time author, mind-melting, beautiful book. And the next is a Catholic fiction fantasy, and it's called The Mark Makers by Jessica Woods, and it is as good as Dune. Highly recommend both of those books.
Wonderful. Fiorella, follow that.
Well, assuming, Kevin, that you don't wish to read the book you and I co-authored, just to remind yourself what it was about.
This is getting like product placement. Let's move on from that.
Sorry, I'm moving on. I'm moving on from this thing of darkness too.
Give me two fiction. Come on.
Okay. No, recent, I tell you what,
recent
two
reads.
Beautiful, So I tell you what, two beautiful modern classics, okay, that I have discovered in recent months, which I have absolutely loved. One is Neville Shute's A Town Like Alice. The other is a completely different novel, also an early 20th century classic, called The Enchanted April by Elizabeth von Arnim.
Let's start with the Neville Shute. What's it about and why is it so good?
It's about a couple, a young English girl and an Australian soldier. Both are taken prisoner by the Japanese in Malaya, and they meet under these terrible circumstances. They are then separated, and they believe forever. She believes that he has been killed, in fact. And they then are reunited, and they make a life together. They marry and make a life together in the Australian outback. But it's a fascinating insight into the way, in time of adversity, you get these characters who emerge as leaders of groups, who then become the entrepreneurs of the future, of the peacetime. It's a fascinating look at Australia just after the war, the way two very different personalities can come together. And it's a beautiful reflection on marriage, in fact.
Okay. And the other book, Fiorella?
It's a completely different read. It's called The Enchanted April. This was recommended to me. Mm-hmm. And it's about a couple of women. They've got really drab, really boring lives. They've got problems with their marriages. Everything's going wrong. And they get the opportunity to go to Italy for a month to rent an old castle. And you end up with these four women, in fact, in this castle in April. It's absolutely beautiful. And you see the way beautiful Italy transforms these women's lives for the better.
I think it's been made into a film, hasn't it?
Quite possibly. It's very, very charming.
Certain. Almost. Certain. You're listening to Fiorella De Maria and Michelle McAloon here on the Drew Mariani Show. And you can join the fun on 888-914-9149. See this as your reading clinic. If you want a suggestion, maybe you're going to on holiday to a country you've never been before and you want a piece of literature pertaining to that country, then phone in. Let's throw everything at these two. They are the best read women I know. Now, sticking with you, Fiorella, because you do write nonfiction as well as fiction, give us two non-fiction books that are really going to set our pulses racing as we read them.
Well, these, again, two very, very different books, but they had a huge impact on me. One is a collection of writings, spiritual writings and letters from the Irish war hero Father Willie Doyle. It's called To Raise the Fallen. And it was a huge introduction for me to this man who I'd never come across before and made me want to be a saint. The other one, completely different, it's an investigative work, came out a couple of years ago, called The Woman Who Fooled the World. Mm-hmm. Belle Gibson's Cancer Con and the Darkness at the Heart of the Wellness Industry. Very depressing reading, but really, really important.
Wow. That sounds really interesting. Michelle, two non-fiction books that are really going to really unputdownable.
Right now I have two books that I think are just stop, drop and read books, because I think they're both really speak to our times and they are so important at this point in time. And the first book is As I Have Loved You, Rediscovering Salvation History, by Father Timothy Vivarek. It is a absolutely beautiful book about salvation, about something called kenotic theology and metanoia, mm-hmm. about this outpouring. And Father Timothy Vivarek is a parish priest. He's 62 years old. He's a brilliant man, and he takes some very difficult concepts and breaks them down into a nitty-gritty, everyday spirituality. And I tell you, it's probably the best Catholic theology book that I've read in the past 5-10 years. I'm a canon lawyer, and I read a lot of Catholic theology. This is an absolutely beautiful book. And the second book
If I may just say, Michelle, that's quite a recommendation, because theology books are not normally good reads, if you know what I mean. I mean, they're not the sort of thing you drop, and read.
Right. This is a fantastic read. It's very well written. It's put out in a way that the logical sequence of it, and it explains our faith. So our salvation, Christ's love for us. His is Coram Deo, in the presence of God. And he explains our faith in the presence of God. It is absolutely, it's beautiful. It's beautiful and very, very accessible. And that's what I'm really excited about this book for. And the next one is George Weigel, and it's To Sanctify the World, The Vital Legacy of Vatican II. Again, I speak to you as a canon lawyer. Vatican II was so important to who we are, in the past, and to who we are today. And Mr. Weigel does a great job of summing up the years prior to Vatican II, how Vatican II was reported, the business of Vatican II, and the legacy of Vatican II. And if you're interested in awe in the church in the world today, this is a book for you to read. And it's typical George Weigel, written very well, sardonically, some humor in it, but very, just lays it out very, very plainly, and probably one of the best books I've read yet on Vatican II.
Yeah, I mean, I think people forget, I mean, a lot of people have read Weigel's John Paul II biography, and I think what a lot of people forget, I mean, it's a magisterial text, but it's also extremely well written. He's a very good writer, I find.
He really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. So, one of the big discussions this side of the Atlantic, I'm not sure about the United States, is the fact that the younger people aren't reading books, you know, that that they're too busy gaming or whatever these days, and especially young men aren't reading books. So if I could put both of you on the spot, Fiorella, you go first and give me a book that somebody listening may have a son or a grandson that they want to really help to open up to the wonderful world of literature. What would be the book that you would place in that teenage boy's hands?
So are we looking at maybe mid-teens, that sort of age?
Yeah, whatever.
That kind of. I think, you see, my contention is that literature is very badly taught, and kids get put off books when they're at school because the stuff they're given to read is usually quite boring. So I would say go straight for a classic, but let it be a modern classic, and let it be one that is written in relatively straightforward language but with interesting concepts. And that is Solzhenitsyn's One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich.
Wow.
Oh, very good. Yes.
It's so, Solzhenitsyn has an incredibly clear, straightforward style. He can conjure up an atmosphere, an environment with just a few words. He draws you into this terrifying world of the Soviet Gulag and takes you on that journey. And I think, certainly, I read that book in my mid-teens, and it was hugely important to me. And I think that is the sort of book I would get a young man to read.
Michelle, what about you?
I always go back to Dune, Frank Herbert's book, the original one, not all the variations that come after it. But to me, that just entering that door of reading, and I know it probably sounds trodden too much, but I think Dune really kind of excites the imagination, especially because I've got three sons, and my three sons loved Dune, and I really think that opened the door to literature. But you know what's funny, Kevin? I'm talking to a lot of publishers right now, and they're telling me that they are selling more books than they have ever sold. At least in the United States. Yes. One thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is Catholic literature is, I mean, just having an absolute renaissance here in the United States, where we're seeing a lot of small Catholic presses come up. We're seeing the University of St. Thomas at Houston with a Master's of Fine Arts in Catholic literature and Catholic writing. I think, you know what, hard times produce good art. And I think that's where we are with Catholic literature
right now. Watch the United States. There's some really exciting things happening as far as literature and Catholicism.
Would you agree with that, Fiorella, that there's a renaissance at the moment in the Catholic world?
Absolutely. World? I think, thankfully, you mentioned the new presses that are emerging, which is really great news. It shows that there is a market growing there. But you've also got the traditional publishers like Ignatius Press, but also the magazines like Dappled Things that are giving a platform to young writers that are prepared to take a risk with a young writer. It's always very hard to publish a first book because you can't always be sure what you're letting yourself in for, but they're taking risks and they're getting these books out there. And there are books there for everyone. You're talking quality fiction, literary fiction, genre fiction, but also books for young people like the New Vision series. And yes, I agree with you, Michelle. I think it's a very exciting time.
Okay, we're just going to take a short break. Can I remind everybody, 888-914-9149. Jump in, ask for a recommendation, or recommend to our literary ladies some book that they should read. When we come back, I'm going to put them both on the spot and ask them for their favourite read of 2022. We'll be back straight after these words.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. Thank you for your show.
This is The Drew Mariani Show.
Marvelous show on the radio right now.
On Relevant Radio.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, flexible premium life insurance. You know, for less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society. Not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and welcome back to The Drew Mariani Show. Coming to you live from London with me, your guest host, Kevin Turley. And I am joined by two literary ladies, Michelle McAloon and Fiorella De Maria, and we are discussing book recommendations. Now, before I put them on the spot, we've got a call. We've got Dee Dee in Phoenix, Arizona. Dee Dee, you're through to our literary ladies. What would you like to ask them?
Hello?
Hello, Dee Dee. Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Oh, yes,
good to hear from you.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had a little glitch here.
Don't worry about it.
My question is, the two wonderful authors recommended literature for young men. My question is, can they recommend literature for young women?
Sure can, Dee Dee. We are an equal opportunities employer at this station. I can assure you of that. So, Michelle, you kick that one off. Young women, what would you recommend?
For young women, actually, you know what? Chrism Press has a historical romance called In Pieces. It's a Catholic historical romance. And I read it this past year. I think she's going to do a series of it. It's really quality writing, and it's a good story. I don't know if I would put it in classical literature, but it's a good. I think it would be a great read for a young woman.
Sounds good. What about you, Fiorella?
I wouldn't hesitate to recommend Corinna Turner's book, I Am Margaret. It's the first in a series. It's a dystopian novel imagining a time in a few generations where young people get recycled if they fail their tests and the church is underground. It's very exciting, big adventure story, but really exploring some very, very important themes. My 14-year-old daughter loved I Am Margaret so much that she couldn't put it down. I had to get her the next one in the series, and, well, it's her birthday tomorrow, and number 3 in the series will be on the table tomorrow morning.
Wow, that's amazing. Dee Dee, I hope that's answered your question. If anybody else wants to put the literary ladies on the spot, it's 888-914-9149. Now, I'm going to put you both on the spot. Best book of 2022 so far. Who wants to go first?
Oh, go on, Michelle.
That's like asking your favorite child.
I know. Okay, well, come on.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I tell you, I think Maya Sinha's book, The City Mother, was a very good read. And the reason why I think it was a very good read, because I think it talked about very realistic of motherhood and of being tired and fatigued and the frustration of motherhood. And it's a story that's kind of stayed with me and resonated in my head. And it's a story I've chewed on. And to me, that's always a great story well told.
Sounds good. What about you, Fiorella?
I'm going to recommend a book I never expected to like, and it's called A Hiker's Guide to Purgatory. It's by Michael Norton.
Yeah. Hmm? Yeah.
Yeah. It's an Ignatius Press novel, just came out this year. It's Michael Norton's first novel, and I hope it won't be the last. I hope you will see more of Michael Norton. And it imagines a 77-year-old man, Dan Geary. He dies, he wakes up in this rolling landscape for what appears to be a walking holiday, and he is of course in purgatory. And the book, through this journey, explores redemption and atonement and causes the soul to look back over his life. It's very beautifully written, both the journey he's going on and his reflections on his past. Very, very interesting read.
It's funny, when you said that about waking up and thinking you're in purgatory, that's my thinking every morning I wake up and turn on the news from England at the moment, with our various chaoses.
Well, I tell you what, Kevin, the purgatory he wakes up in is a lot easier than 2022 England.
Now, listen, can I ask you both, because you're both very good literary people, you read your books. You know, I used to feel guilty about not finishing a book. Did you ever find that? That you felt you had to kind of persevere with it?
I don't like not finishing a book. I feel as if I've done the author some kind of an insult if I don't finish it. It's like I don't like not finishing writing a book. I don't like the lack of closure. Every so often, if I find a book really offensive, I just feel that the author does not deserve my time. That's the only time I'd really put a book aside.
What about you, Michelle? Do you finish everything you start?
I pretty much finish everything I start, but I'm kind of with you, Farrell. If I have to, I will skim it at the end. If I really find it, I just recently put one down that it was dirty and I just didn't want to read anymore. And that was very rarely I put it aside. But if the book is boring or it's just not speaking to me, I'll try to skim it. And there's been a couple books like that. You know, not every book is a winner. Not every book is going to appeal to you. But I try to get the main ideas out of the book. I read mostly nonfiction. So in my show features, it seems to be mostly nonfiction. So it's easier, I think, to do that than with a bad fiction book.
Okay, we're going to go to Minnesota, and we have a question from Laurie. Laurie, you're on the air speaking to Michelle and Fiorella, Germany and England.
Wonderful. I am a Catholic school teacher, and currently I'm teaching fifth grade. I would love to have a couple recommendations that the children that age would love to read.
I have a great book. We just interviewed the author. Her name is Abby Redlinger, and she wrote The Young Federalists. And it is kind of an adventure story around the Federalist Papers. And it's well illustrated. It has some really difficult concepts, but made very easily understood actually a young person's level about some of the concepts in the Federalist Papers. And she's thinking about writing a series. And this young author is only 17 years old. So her name is Abby Redlinger.
Wonderful. What about you, Fiorella?
Could you just remind me, please, what age is the grade you mentioned? Because the grade system is slightly different in the UK.
10, 11 years old.
Thank you,
okay.
Laurie, because I would have been use either on that one.
Well, I think I would say that possibly the I Am Margaret series is a little bit too old for that age group, but any of the books in the New Vision series which look at not just the lives of the saints, but also Catholic heroes, so people like Maria von Trapp, for example, who's not canonized, but she's got a fascinating story, are all there. There's something in that series for any child that age, really, whatever it is. They're looking at Carlo Acutis, you know, they want adventure, they want martyrdom, they want inspiration. It's all there.
Wonderful. And that's Ignatius Press, isn't it, Fiorella?
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, listen, ladies, it's been wonderful speaking to you both, but no, I'm afraid, Michelle, we've run out of time. Michelle, tell people where they can find out. tell people where they can find out about you and your podcast.
Go to Crossword, and it's two words, Cross and Word, and I'm on all the main podcast platforms. So, I have a series, it's called the Hartwell Mystery Series, and that's a great one for that age group, too.
Perfect. Okay. And Fiorella, where can people find out about you and your various works?
Well, I'm on Instagram, but you can find me on Ignatius Press. I have an author page. Please do look me up. Take a look at my books.
Thank you very much, ladies. And thank you very much for your company tonight. I really enjoyed being with you. It's been a pure joy. So from a very cold, dark, and now very still London town, I bid you good night and God bless.